Now, welcome to another inspiring edition of Sound Insight with Dr. Tom Curran.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to the program. This is Dr. Tom Curran. It's great to be with you today. So much going on these days. A bunch of kids are sick with the flu. Holy cow. I heard there were a couple local Catholic grade schools that actually closed because they had so many sick kids. And Elise was saying how many kids were missing yesterday at the Chesterton Academy. And she's actually homesick today. And it's crazy. So flu season is upon us. So please take good care of yourselves for that. I am excited about today's program, and I'm going to continue on talking about Father Noonan back in a minute.
Hey, this is Dr. Tom Curran, the host of Sound Insight, but also a realtor serving wonderful folks like you in the state of Washington and in Idaho. I've had the privilege and pleasure of helping dozens of families in the last 2.5 years discern and find a strategy, a path, and a plan to help their families find a whole new life in Eastern Washington and Northern Idaho. If I could be of service to you in that, I would love to. Please reach out, drtomcurran.com, drtomcurran.com.
Hey, welcome back to the program. We're going to begin with a prayer. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Lord our God, thank you for the gift of spiritual fathers. Thank you for the gift of those who pour into our lives to be a blessing to us so that we also might be a conduit of blessing to others. Lord, I ask you to give me insight and wisdom to share well, to be an encouragement to folks that are out there. And Lord, I do ask for the special graces of trusting in you, Lord, and leaning on and looking to the Blessed Mother, Our Lady of Lourdes, looking to her for healing, looking to Our Lady, the Untier of Knots, to be someone who will help us, especially in family situations and relationships. And we make this prayer in Jesus' holy name. Amen. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. A little confession. I noticed that I've been a little bit frenzied in my days, and I begin to I was reflecting, what's different about my prayer time? And two things jumped out at me. The first was that I had been taking less quiet time, and lo and behold, here I am talking on the radio about the importance of being still and being silent so that the Lord will come and communicate to you and just at that human capacity. But I had a little picture came up, a post, I don't know if it was on Facebook, and it was, "There is no problem." It was from Our Lady of Fatima. "There's no problem in the world that couldn't be solved by praying the rosary every day." Something like that. That was very convicting to me because I realized, wait a minute, I haven't been praying my rosary every day. And I've got great excuses, but I have no excuse. There's no excuse. I mean, come on. So yesterday, a good day. I still had the same number of things going on, things pressing in on me, things that I felt like I had to solve, things that were giving me a sense of anxiety and trying to figure them out and trying to push them through and make them happen. And there was that little screen, that little post came back to my mind. And I'm thinking, I am not going to relate to these things happening in my life in the same way. I am going to begin by praying not one rosary, not two rosaries, not three rosaries, but I'm going to begin my day by praying four rosaries and a Divine Mercy chaplet, do my office of readings. And what a blessing. Yay. All right. Let's go. Let's keep it up. And what that did was it gave me a boost of, strength or awareness that when these situations that were unfolding in my yesterday that had to do with real estate transactions and negotiation back and forth, and then there was this basketball game thing, and we ended up having to forfeit a playoff game because of the flu. I couldn't even get five healthy kids to be able to play a game. So we just literally had to forfeit. And this is the first time that Chesterton has been this far in the playoffs, and we just had to forfeit. Now, praise be to God, it wasn't if you lose, you're out. So we have another game on Saturday. So please pray for the health of my players. Please. We want them to be healthy in time for the game. And as of this morning, at least four of them are still sick. So and one of them with pneumonia. So please pray for a quick and complete recovery for my kids, that they would be able to be at full strength when they play on Saturday. I know that's such a little thing, and it's not a big deal thing for compared to the big things happening in the world, but it matters to these young ladies who have been battling, and to us who have been investing in them, pouring into them, right? That's sort of the theme for today. I really want to pour into them to not just become better at basketball and excel as a team, but to use these the life lessons that are embedded in basketball and in trying to excel at sports as a way of helping to foster a greater holiness and a greater sense of striving for the heights in the spirit of Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati. That strive for the heights. Let's go. That was the theme. Elevate is the theme for our team, and so it would be. It'd be a real sadness to enter on a whimper, right? We want to finish with a bang, like putting in our best effort and be exhilarated even when it comes to a defeat. Because realistically, this run that we're on is going to come to an end, but we'd rather not have it come to an end on Saturday. So say a prayer for that. Okay. I mentioned Our Lady of Lourdes because of the novena for healing that is leading up to the Feast of Our Lady of Lourdes in about 6 days from now. And at the Cathedral of Our Lady of Lourdes, every day during this, most of them are in the evenings, they have a speaker who comes and offers a testimony or a teaching or a reflection, and there's some prayers to pray, seeking different forms of healing from Our Lady of Lourdes. And say a prayer, because Father David Gaines, one of the priests that was serving in the very first evening of the novena, was attacked. Someone, a homeless man who was obviously troubled, came from the first pew and ran up into the sanctuary and attacked him. And thanks be to God, he was able to deflect the blow. And with a couple of other priests and then others, were able to subdue the man and be able to have him not hurt anybody or himself, and were able to take him away to be able to be attended to. So that could be pretty traumatizing. So thank God that nothing more serious happened to Father Gaines, just a wonderful holy priest of God who ministers to so many and is an inspiration to so many. So say a prayer for Father Gaines that there'd be no lingering impacts, and for the novena itself, that it would not be, there wouldn't be any further disruptions, any causes of concern. So you can keep that in prayer as well. And in passing, I am going to be interviewing someone that has a finger on the pulse of the laws that are moving through the House and the Senate that are disturbing and even just tragically attacking the Catholic faith and the Catholic way of life. And the most prominent among those is a bill in two forms passing through the Senate and the House that has to do with forcing priests or attempting to force priests to break the seal of confession if they hear certain content. And so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that right now, but just to say, I'm going to bring on someone who can give us further insight into this. And this is a bill that in more than one form has attempted to been passed through the legislature in Washington state. And thanks be to God, there has been enough of a groundswell of opposition to be able to keep those bills from advancing too far and potentially passing. And I know our own Bishop Daly out here in Spokane has spoken again and given a very strongly worded statement against this law coming into effect and how priests will not break their seal. And so, even if something like this were to pass, they would prefer prison over breaking the seal of confession. So we'll get around to that, but, keep your eyes open and your ears attuned. In fact, you'll hear a message produced by Sacred Heart Radio that will, during this program, that will give you a heads up about what you can do to voice your opposition to this and how you can call your state representative and your state senator that covers your legislative district to voice your disapproval. So, like I said, lots going on in the world around us today. Today in the program, I'm on part three, and I really do think this is going to be the final part of my sharing about key insights that I've gained from Father Noonan, Father Mark Noonan, as a real spiritual mentor and father, a spiritual father in my life, and how it's amazing that the way that we approach life, brothers and sisters, the way that we enter into life is so often impacted by individuals who have a level of maturity, a level of insight that when they come into, or we come into their orbit, they pour into us, they invest in us in such a way that there's an impression, there's a deep impact that can, in fact, launch us way further than we would ever go. You know, they talk about, I'm a midget standing on the shoulder of giants, right? That whole theme of, if I'm leaning on the insights of those who have gone before me, I'm standing on their shoulders and I'm able to see higher and further because of what they have poured into me. So I'm sharing with you in these days about four of the most impactful men who have impacted, who have had that kind of influence on my life. And the first is this Father Mark Noonan, whom, if you've been listening to the program, you remember is a philosophy professor and a priest of the Archdiocese of Boston and a spiritual director at the seminary that when I was there back in 84 to 86, and then afterwards when I left the seminary in 89 through 92 and even beyond. So I'm sharing with you these insights because they're so profound and I just don't read it. I don't bump into them. I don't read them in other books or lectures or online posts and blogs and talks. So I'm trying to share them with you so that you can be a recipient through me of what I received from Father Noonan. Okay, so yesterday, I was focused on this contemplative stance, the idea of personal knowledge, the idea that you come to insight into the true nature of things, whether it's yourself, a situation happening around you, a person or some other aspect, a relationship or some other dynamic happening in the world around you or creation itself. By contemplating, being still and seeking to appreciate, having a sense of reverence for and awaiting the coming out into the open of insights that you won't get by just simply analyzing and studying and trying to pick apart and try to utilize it and manipulate and force something to happen. No, this is more about being receptive. So today on Sound Insight, I'm going to share with you things that are much more personal, right? They come back to the person that have helped me to live well. What does it mean to live well in the city? That was the goal of Socrates. How do I live well in the city? And as a philosopher, he trained us in that. And so talking about things like, do you have a philosophy of life? I'm getting ahead of myself. But that is one of the themes that he formed in me was, don't just have a mission statement or what's your purpose, but do you have a philosophy of life, an entire way of approaching life? And in fact, Father Noonan not only introduced that topic to my life, but helped me to be able to ponder and to go through a practice of coming up with a philosophy of life. So picking up on some of those other principles or themes that are connected to that, I'm going to start with one that is a noise. The noise is a cluck. And I do that because Father Noonan would do that in class. He would say, it was his way of saying, when you ponder something, when you reflect on something, when you are seeking to gain true knowledge about some reality or understand some concept or a theme or a book, you will study it. You will try to work through it. You will try to figure it out. And you might still be frustrated that you don't get it. And then all of a sudden, cluck, it happens. It drops down and you get it. And it sounds like an interesting theory, but until you experience it, it seems a little bit far-fetched. Well, he taught us this class on the human person. And then in the last section of the class, the last, you know, last, I don't know, six or seven class sessions, he was covering the book, The Acting Person by Pope John Paul II, prior to becoming Pope, Karol Wojtyła. So a brilliant philosophical work about what it means to be a person and how action, the person in action, is at the essence of coming to understand who we are and how we are to live well in the world. It's a very difficult book, not easy at all. And he helped us work through the book and, you know, was mapping out, like, here are the key themes and here are the key insights. And it was difficult. And you could see how so many of the students were frustrated trying to understand what is the thrust of what John Paul II is getting at. How do we get it? Well, he said, keep working it over. Keep working through the clay, keep working on it, working it through, pondering it, mapping it out, writing it down. And he said, at some point, you're going to get it. It'll all come together for you. Trust me. And it happened. I still remember I would take all the concepts and I would map them all out. Now I'm saying, I don't get it. Now I'd map them all out again and I'd ponder it and go back and read and study and the definition and map it all out again. And then all of a sudden, one time when I did all that map out, it just all fell in place. And I got it. I got it. It was so powerful that I got it. And I got it not because I had finally cracked the nut and figured it out, but that it was given to me as a gift. Given to me as a gift. I didn't earn it. I didn't deserve it. But I continued to do the human level of preparation to till the soil and to prepare myself to receive as a gift what I wasn't going to be able to conquer through my own efforts. My brothers and sisters, that is so important as a means of gaining insight into yourself and into your world. I'm going to give a couple more examples of this in just a minute, so please stay tuned.
Hi, this is Dr. Tom Curran, and you know me as the host of Sound Insight. I am also letting folks know that as a realtor licensed in the state of Washington and in Idaho, I love serving Catholic families and others who are discerning a move for yourselves. It's much more than buying or selling a home. It's discerning a whole new life. If that's something that you would find a help in, if I could be of service to you, please be in touch. You can find out more at drtomcurran.com. drtomcurran.com.
Welcome back to the program. It's great to be with you today. This is Dr. Tom Curran, and I'm sharing with you some insights, again, I gained from Father Mark Noonan, and wanting to hand them on to you. And so this idea of trusting that you, in fact, will come to insight, but it will require the patient care to ponder and reflect and not getting frustrated that you can't figure it out, but by reverencing the situation you're in. Okay, and that term reverence is going to come around quite a bit today because this is going to have to do with your own life, okay? That insight will come as a gift, not through simply analyzing things. I'll give you a couple of examples. The first had to do with, and I've told the story before on the program, but this is traced back to Father Mark Noonan again, and it's a really important insight. I found that when I entered the seminary, I was 18, I was about to turn 19, and maybe I was 19 when I entered, and I was about to turn 20. Okay, so yeah, that was correct. And so entered the seminary as a junior in college, and here I am living away from home for the first time. And I had a great group of friends that I would get together with so regularly. And now here I am in the seminary and just trying to meet guys, just trying to get to know some guys and become friends. And that just takes time. And so I discovered that in my, you know, early days in a few weeks in the seminary, I would just be up at 10 at night. And yet you had to be in your room. I think it was probably by 9. And so you sort of lights out and be quiet, 10 o'clock. And I would find myself going down to the refectory, down in the basement level of the seminary. And there they had just two things. They had like a loaf of bread with a jar of peanut butter. And for drink, they had milk. And I would find myself going down there 10 o'clock at night and making myself a peanut butter sandwich and drinking a glass of milk. This was not my behavior. This was not what I would do. I'd never do that at home. If anything, I would be eating like a bowl of fruit of some sort. But the idea of going and having a peanut butter sandwich, I'm eating it and I'm drinking the milk and I'm thinking, what am I doing? And then we have a second sandwich. And at that point in my life, believe it or not, I was very thin. I graduated from college weighing 153 pounds. That's how thin I was. 6 foot, 1 inch, 153. I was thin as a rail. I could not gain weight. Okay. So here I am eating these peanut butter sandwiches. And I'd go back to my room and I'm thinking, okay, I'm full. But why did I go do that? I have no idea why. And so I can remember telling this to Father Noonan. And I said, I don't get it. And he said, Thomas, he said, give yourself permission to feel what you're feeling. And I'm like, what? Makes no sense to me. He said, the next time it's 10 o'clock at night, instead of going downstairs and getting that peanut butter sandwich, you know, it's all dark in the hallways, dark, and then go down there and turn on a light and get the peanut butter sandwich. Instead of doing that, just sit in your chair in your room. Just sit in the chair and do what? Just feel what you are feeling. And I'm like, okay, at this point, believe it or not, 19 years old, my background in electrical engineering and my general tendency is to go do stuff, do, act. To sit and be still and be quiet and to like just await the emergence of the feelings that are within me, that I'm not giving myself permission to feel, whatever that means. It was like, okay, well, I'll just do it. Just see what happens. And I can remember sitting there and first night sitting down and just thinking, okay, this is kind of weird. And okay, just let me just try to be quiet and kind of not like try to be too active and thinking. And okay, I give myself permission to feel what I'm feeling. And then all of a sudden, just it slowly dawned on me over the course of 5 or 10 or 15 minutes that, wait a minute, I really was feeling something quite deeply, but I wasn't aware of it. I wasn't conscious that there was something that I was feeling deeply within me, and it was driving my behavior. It was driving me to go and get the peanut butter sandwich. Well, what was I feeling? It was loneliness. I was feeling lonely. And I can remember say I was feeling lonely. And he said, okay, give yourself permission to feel lonely. Okay, I'm gonna use language here. This is Father Noonan language, and it's changed my life. Okay. Give yourself permission to be someone who is experiencing loneliness. Embrace yourself as one who is lonely, which is not the same as embracing loneliness. I can embrace myself and accept myself as someone who's experiencing loneliness without saying I'm embracing the loneliness. No, I'm going to allow myself to feel it and see what it does to me. Well, what do you mean? What does it do to me? Well, unbelievable. I'm sitting there and all of a sudden this feeling of loneliness when I'm like, okay, I'm going to give myself permission to just feel this. All of a sudden, it just starts getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And I'm like, I am going to die. This feels horrible. This feels terrible. I hate this feeling. I am suffering. The feeling of loneliness just sort of eating away at me all of a sudden grew in my awareness. I became conscious of how deeply lonely I was. And it was like, oh, wait a minute. What is the eating all about? What was the jump up the downstairs and stuff myself with peanut butter sandwiches and milk when I'm not hungry? What was that all about? Oh, even though I wasn't conscious of my loneliness, my interior sense of self knew it and wanted to fill it. Rather than allowing myself to become conscious of it and conscious that this was driving an activity, let me try to get at the core of it and say, wait a minute, I don't have to act on the basis of this. I can experience it. And the language I gave you is this. The language that Father Noonan gave me and that I'm giving you is, give yourself permission to feel what you're feeling, because when you do, you'll begin to gain this awareness of not only what it is you're feeling that you were unconscious of, but the way that it is living in you. And when you are able to embrace yourself, not I reject this loneliness, I cast out and rebuke this loneliness. No, it's when I embrace myself as someone who's lonely. Ooh, I embrace myself. I accept myself. I know that you love me even at that point in my life where I'm experiencing this loneliness. So I come to you. I come to you as one who is lonely. And I come to you with this experience of loneliness. And Lord, I say, please receive me, even me at that point in my life where I'm experiencing this loneliness. This language is so important, brothers and sisters. It is so important because it's not just like, Lord, I give you that loneliness. Take that loneliness away from me. And somehow I'm pushing it away from me. You know what? Does it go away? It does not. It does not. It my attempt to force it away versus, Lord, I give myself to you. I give myself to you as one who is lonely and as someone, and I give myself to you at that place in my life that has this loneliness. And then you know what the Lord does? He begins to cleanse you of it. He began to cleanse me of it. And in cleansing me of it, he began to replace the ache in my heart. Ooh, you like that language. The ache in my heart with a greater sense of intimacy with the Lord. That the very ache of loneliness became a doorway for deeper intimacy with the Lord. Wow. That is beautiful. And once again, this is not language I've heard before in talks, in homilies, in books. Now, there are books out there by, in psychology and self-awareness and stuff like that, that you're like, oh, I've kind of heard things like that before. Well, as a 19-year-old in the midst of living what I was living, that it changed my life. It changed my life because I began to live in accord with that sense of reverencing myself, even myself who's experiencing something like this. All right. I'm going to go to another one of these insights that come from Father Noonan that's connected to this. And that has to do with the idea that this kind of personal insight is something that will only take root when it comes from your own path of self-discovery. What do I mean? So after I spent 2 years in Boston, I studied in Rome for 3 years. I did not have lots of contact with Father Noonan during that time, maybe just during the summer when I came back 1 year. And then it was when I came back and I started working for a Catholic parish and I started seeing him more regularly. And after maybe a year or two of seeing him, I came to him one day and after one of my sessions or during one of my spiritual direction appointments. And I said to him, I said, you know, I realize just how much my own relationship with God is based on and traced back to my own belief that I have to earn God's love. So much of what I do, how I do it, the eagerness and the zeal with which I do things is that deep down, there is this belief that I need to earn God's love. And I said, I needed Jesus to share that with you. And he said, I knew that years ago. Oh, that's not surprising to me. I knew that years ago. And I said to him, what? You knew that years ago. Why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you just say to me a couple of years ago, Thomas, I see that the way you're talking and the way you're acting, I want you to think about this. Maybe you're doing it because you believe you have to earn God's love. And he said, I could have told you that, but you wouldn't have understood it. In fact, the biggest danger would be that because you're smart or clever or you're able to have an understanding of concepts, that you would have said, oh, yeah, I get that. I can see how I'm like that. And it would not have been penetrating down to the level at which it would live in you as a true and profound insight that comes from you, that it will come out of you as a, remember that cluck sound? That, yes, that's so true, right? It couldn't come from the outside in. It had to come from the inside out. And so there's a way in which, brothers and sisters, that when we are in relationship with others, we might be able to see things about them that they don't see about themselves. And the temptation will be that in the spirit of helping them, that we're just going to just push ourselves right on in and say, hey, you know what I think your issue is? X, Y, Z, you know? And they might be able to take that in and say, gosh, thank you. You know, I'm going to think about that. I'll ponder that. Oh, that's not true. And they might then become a bit more immune to that reality than open to that reality. Now, when I say all of this, I'm not saying that we don't have a place for speaking into other people's lives. We don't have a way of relating with others where we don't share with them things that we're seeing. Like I did this for over 20 years as a coach. I would be in dialogue and we'd come to some insight and then there would be a plan of taking action. And sometimes those insights would come from me. As we were in dialogue, it's like, oh, hey, here's something I'll bring to the table. Does this make any sense to you? Which actually leads me to another insight from Father Noonan that, again, I just haven't heard before. But when I heard it from him, it made so much sense. And I'm going to share it with you. But we're up against a break. So when we come back, I'm going to get into the next insight from Father Mark Noonan. Okay, back in a minute. Hey, welcome back to the program. It's great to be with you. It's Dr. Tom Curran. And another insight from Father Mark Noonan. Again, not heard it before, but when I heard it from him, it changed how I saw the work of evangelizing. And it also impacted deeply my whole future career in coaching executives. And it was, what is the relationship between truth and meaning? So we live in a time, and this was even true back then, 40 years ago, where we would focus on the idea that, well, something is true or it's not true. And, oh, let's strive to get the objective truth of the matter. And is that, you know, versus relativism, right? And is that important? Absolutely. But there are other distinctions to be made, right? So a distinction that I would often make is between truth and goodness, that instead of speaking about an issue from the standpoint of, is it true or is it false? What is the truth of this issue? What is the truth of the matter? And there's oftentimes such a different mindset about the way of seeing a reality that there is no common ground and you're just bumping heads, like the issue of abortion. Right? Is it about life or is it about the life of the child or is it about the choice of the mother? And what really is at stake in abortion? Is there really a human life or is that a fetus? Is that fetus a human life? And when does it become that? And you'll get these clashes. And one of the things Father Noonan said was, when you can talk about what is entailed in a truth. What is the therefore of a truth? When you can draw a relationship or a connection between the truth and the meaning of the truth, then you'll often open up other avenues for conversation. And so, for instance, one of the things that I tend to do in dialogue, and I find that it opens up really interesting conversations, is shifting from the transcendental, which is the, again, that's a fundamental trait or feature of all things that exist, is that it's true and good and beautiful and one, right? That's a Western philosophy, Thomas Aquinas, all of that. Is if it's true, then there's also a goodness about the truth. And when it comes to a human being, you can talk about human flourishing. And we could say, hey, for all that you want to talk about the reality of abortion, just say, does it lead to human flourishing? Who's flourishing in this? And then all of a sudden, it's like, I'm not even talking about the truth. I'm not even talking about choice versus life. I'm talking about the impact of that choice on the human flourishing of those who experience it. And the reality is, guess what? You can see how those who have made these choices very often are not flourishing at all. And does that make you pause? Does that make you ponder that what you're proposing as a way of life, and you might believe in propaganda in a seductive approach to presenting it, you know what? The people who are experiencing it are just not flourishing. They're so broken. They're so broken. And that's where, just for instance, when you take a look at the pro-life movement versus the pro-choice movement or pro-abortion movement at rallies, and you'll see just how frankly broken and ugly and dark the pro-choice, pro-abortion side is versus the joy, the verve, the life, the vibrancy of the pro-life movement. It's beautiful. It's glorious. It shows human flourishing compared to angry, bitter, ugly, broken people, just dark. And it's like, is that worth paying attention to, right? So Father Noonan, he was the one who introduced this to me as things to pay attention to. Now let's focus in on the specific principle, which was the relationship between truth and meaning. And he said, you can help people connect truth and meaning by facilitating the naming of their experience as true. What will bring together what is true with what is meaningful in someone's life? Well, can you facilitate the naming of their experience as true? And that's one you're just going to have to write down, because it the implications of it is more than I can break open for you in the moment. But I'll say to you, this fundamentally shifted how I did evangelization. So when I first started in the work of evangelization at the parish level, there was an initial program of going door to door and talking with people. And this was a training program that someone had initiated, and I was stepping into it. And this training program was, well, when you go knock on the door and you come inside and you start talking with them, you then preach the gospel and you just tell them about Jesus and have you heard the gospel before? And it was so informationally based that I'm like, okay, this is just not going to work. So I said, let me follow the Father Noonan principle. Let me see if I can facilitate the naming of their experience as true. And so I would sit down and I'd say, well, tell me your experience of being at church, and then tell me your experience of life. And so I would start bringing them into the experience of some fundamental realities in their lives. And I said, let's talk about your life. They said, you know, are you flourishing? So what do you see for your life? Like, you're alive right now. What do you see for your horizon when you look forward towards the remainder of your life? Okay, you're alive right now and you're headed towards death. Okay, let's talk about that. So what do you think happens when you are facing that reality of death? Well, gosh, I don't really like that. That's not really a fun thing to think about. I said, well, let's see if we can gain some insight into this. And basically, I started to connect their own experience of fundamental issues in life and fundamental things that they've experienced, and started drawing lines of connection between that and our beliefs that Jesus Christ rose from the dead, and by rising from the dead, not only conquered death, but he conquered my death and your death, so that as we look towards our own death, we don't have to wonder about the outcome of that, because Christ already died my death. And as long as I'm immersed into his life, then what will happen to me at my death will be what happened to him at his death, which is I'll go through death to resurrection and to life with God forever. And as I walked them through that experientially, I'm like, that's what our faith is about. Is this something that we have never heard this before? We have never thought about it like that. We thought we knew all about the faith and all about the church and all of this, but I have never, what was it? It was relevant. It was meaningful. And all I did was facilitate this connecting of the truths of our faith, things that they've heard, but they've only heard it as information, maybe pieces of data that they had to memorize and were exposed to when they went to church. And instead, I drew them back to these fundamental experiences that they have in their own life and was able to tease out, what does that experience mean for you? What does that mean for your life? What does that mean for the direction of your life? What does that mean for what you hope for in your life? And then how does that now come back and have a light shed on it by Jesus Christ and the gospel and the practice of your Catholic faith? So what I just shared with you there, I did pretty quickly. And the idea that you can take the principle that I just laid out and all of a sudden apply it like gracefully and with a sense of maturity and nuance, probably not going to happen. But if you can hold on to the principle to facilitate the naming of their experience as true, I'm telling you, you will go a long way in helping get beyond the idea that in teaching my kids, what I need to do first and last is make sure that I'm presenting to them content that is orthodox, that is in accord with the church's teaching. That's an of course, but the path to take is linking, facilitating, connecting that to their life experience and helping them find the meaning of the truth, the impact of the truth, the entailment, the therefore of that truth in their lives. Okay? So there you go. That, thanks be to God, of Father Noonan. That was another insight that I got from him. Okay, I have a couple more that are actually connected to your life, and this will actually be really important for you in terms of your married life. And then I have another one that I'm going to end with that has to do with receptivity as a fundamental mode of living well in this world. Again, another Father Noonanism. Okay. All right. I'll be back in a minute to continue. All right, welcome back to the program. I was just reviewing my notes, and I actually have two more principles for Father Noonan that have to do with you living well as a human being, and then I'll get to receptivity, okay? So the first of these that have to do with living well, especially in relationship with someone, with Carrie. I've been married to Carrie for 30 years, and I got to tell you, I'm going to share with you a distinction. Once again, I never heard in a marriage talk, never read in a marriage book. I learned about it from Father Noonan in his course on the human person, and it fundamentally has shaped how Carrie and I live our married life regarding conversations about things where we not only, you know, we experience a real disagreement, but also are trying to figure out a path forward. And that is that there's a difference between an authentic need and a selfish need. There's a difference between an authentic need and a selfish need. And so just saying that out loud, and then, by the way, there's a second distinction under it, which is there's a difference between being selfish and being self-centered, okay? That second one is that second distinction is more, I guess it's more on the problematic side, right? So let's start with the authentic need versus the selfish need. How many times in your married life are you going to have a spouse say to you. Guys, your wife is going to say to you, I need this from you, or I need this. And we feel like we're kind of stuck at that point. We're stuck with, well, she's saying she needs it. Now I've got to do something. And I think that the typical, when there is a response at all, it's a, do you really? Or is that what you want? Do you need it or do you want it? And while that can be helpful, I found that this other distinction is in fact more subtle and more profound. It runs at a deeper level, because they can say, no, I don't just want it, I need it, right? What might they need? Well, they might need to have certain things in their lives. I want a certain possession, or I want a certain lifestyle, or I want a certain activity or hobby in my life, or I want to be able to spend my time doing this, or, and you know what, these things, they can run the gamut of how you spend time with them, how you spend time as a family, what you're buying for the house, the, again, lifestyle decisions. And having this distinction be operating, well, I understand that you need it, but can you reflect a little bit more on whether that need is something that is authentic? I mean, it really does run deep in you, and there's a healthy need that is being met there, because we as human beings have needs, and I want to make sure that your authentic needs are being met. Or is there a selfish aspect to this? And another way of saying selfish is a neediness. Is there a brokenness here that's coming out into the open where, you know what, I'm actually needy. And so it's because I'm needy that I'm putting this forward to you and saying, I need this from you, or I need this for myself. And it's actually not life-giving for you to get that. That's not going to bring you to life, because you're acting out of a brokenness and a neediness. And let me just say this, guys. Don't lead with that. Don't let that be the first thing you say to your spouse. But even putting the distinction on the table becomes super helpful when there can be a kind of introspection to say, you know what? I get it. I do think I have an authentic need, and that's part of what I'm sharing with you. But I do also see that there's a brokenness here. There's a bit of selfishness or a neediness that's here that's not really healthy. And so let's see if we can sort that out. We can sort that out, right? So, and this also, by the way, this plays a big part. This can play a big part in how you raise kids as well. But let me tie it to the second distinction, which is the difference between selfishness and self-centeredness. So of the two, self-centeredness is far worse. Selfishness, again, goes back to a kind of brokenness or a type of neediness that we can all have, right, as fallen human beings. And we're not always mature. We have to grow in virtue. And so there's going to be a neediness in our lives. And you know what? It's not really beautiful, and it's not really life-giving. But you know what? It's part of the human condition, and it is something that we'll have to live with and try to work through. Self-centeredness is far more dangerous and far more difficult, because if you could hear it, self-centeredness means that I am centering these realities in my life around myself. I place myself at the center of my thinking, my concern, my care, my emphasis. It all comes back to me. I'm in conversation with you, and all of a sudden it becomes about me. No matter what it is we're talking about for you, somehow it's going to come back to me. Or the issue that we're talking about, hey, what about me? The self in the center. Even God gets brought into my life because it helps me be at the center of my life. And the biggest threat is that God would want to dislodge me from the center of my own thinking and my own way of living. Now, in the last few years, I think there's been a rise of folks who identify different forms of narcissism. I am not an expert in any of that. So I think that has come a bit more out into the open. So I'm not really talking about a psychological brokenness or a mental illness. I'm talking about a personal fallen condition that keeps me in the center of my own life. That requires conversion, fundamental conversion. And let me just say it this way, folks, you got kids, make sure they don't marry someone who's self-centered. Please don't let them do it, because then you'll have a situation where in the marriage, I am in this marriage for you and you are in this marriage for you. At least we're in agreement on that. And that just becomes a huge cross, huge. So one of the things that you have to pay attention to in your kids is, okay, how are my kids being generous? How are my kids being self-giving and self-sacrificing? Are they also attending to their own authentic needs, that's important for them to embrace? Are they aware of their own neediness and how to address it? And is there that ugly poison of self-centeredness that is in any of my kids? Because if it is, we have to work hard to bring them to conversion, to break them of that. That is not a life-giving way for them to go forward in life. Okay, so I share that with you. Now, I have time. I probably only have time for this one last one. I'll have to do receptivity tomorrow. And this has to do with brokenness. Father Noonan, he brought another principle to me that was so very powerful. It had to do with healing. Does God heal in this world? Yes, he does. But then he said, regarding the healing that God has for us in this world, sometimes the healing is not that we overcome and have a restoration or have this transformation of some broken part or some ill part in our lives, but the healing is by learning to live well with our brokenness, learning to live well with our limits. And so healing isn't just about restoration and elimination of brokennesses, but healing is also learning to live well with your own limits, your fundamental limits, and even your brokennesses in your life. Why? Well, I'm not weak because I have weaknesses. I have weaknesses because I'm weak. And on earth, I'm never going to overcome all of that part of my human condition. And so I am called upon to learn to reverence myself as someone who has this brokenness. And so I say, for instance, like there are guys, a lot of guys today struggle with internet pornography. And when they try to battle against it, they seek repentance and transformation. They seek healing. Well, for some of them, the healing comes from learning to live well with that broken desire, maybe a desire in them that has become broken and on earth is never going to be fully healed. But the healing will be learning to recognize that I need to establish boundaries and limitations around what I do, where I go, what I look at, how technology is part of my life. And that's the healing. The healing is learning to reverence myself as someone who has these limits. And that's what the Lord is asking me to do, not that I'm going to overcome these things. And this actually leads me to one final one, and it has to do with the concept of surrender. And this is, again, another profound statement, never read it in another book, and it's this. He says that the I who surrenders can surrender everything except the I who is surrendering. I myself, I as a human being, I can surrender. Lord, I give you this part of my life. I give you that part of my life. Lord, I give you all of this. I give you everything. But the I who's doing the act of surrendering, I can't give myself. I can't give myself in that dimension where I am a rebel. And that's where I need to be conquered. I'll talk more about this tomorrow. God bless.